Okay, so welcome again to Philosophical Coffee. I am not going to do any opening or closing because I suck at that. And they say things like, do your strengths, do what you're good at, don't do what you're bad. I am not good at opening and closings. I am not. And they felt fake and phony to me. And one of the things, this is really a very real thing. When you're doing integration, especially the integration sciences, authenticity is a side effect, one of the strongest side effects, because what you are doing when you're doing integration sciences, you are actually putting yourself through the dialectical compression learning. Dialectical compression learning is to personality and educational learning that blacksmithing and metallurgy is to slag. You are literally, when you have a crucible in blacksmithing, you are taking the metal, you're melting it down, you have a mold, that's the crucible, you put the metal in there and then you melt it. When you melt it, you're going to get impurities, you're going to have dirt, that's slag, and you're going to have non-metals, or you're going to have elements that are not pure metal. So let's say you are working with steel. Anything that is not steel is an impurity. When you take it out of its crucible, you're going to pour it into the mold. And once you pour it into the mold, it starts to cool. Now, once it cools, that's when you can start working with it. Now, the other way you can do this is it doesn't melt, it doesn't turn into a liquid. It turns into something that's pliable. So then you take the crucible out. This is a clay crucible. And you take a hammer. Now, when I say take it out, I mean like you are using blacksmith pliers for this one. You take it out of the fire and then you take out a hammer and you hammer off the crucible. So a clay crucible gets destroyed every time you do a mold or every time you start metallurgy. You start hammering off the crucible falls off, and then you start pounding down the metal. Now, not only are you shaping the blade, you are also compressing, you're using pressure to remove the impurity, and that's causing it to like fly off. And when you're watching a blacksmith work, you're gonna see sparks flying. You're gonna see these little things fly off and catch fire and then disappear. That is slag. That is impurities. And that's what you're doing, is you're purifying the metal. The hotter your furnace, the cleaner your metal, the more you can pound, the more you work the metal, the cleaner the metal. Now, if you can't get the furnace hot enough, the slag stays in there. And that's when you pound it out to get that. You want to compress the metal. That way you get all the slag out. So this was actually a huge thing in metallurgy around the 700s to 9th century BCE. We saw this with Damascus steel. They had that mastered. It was beautiful what they were doing. We have not been able to replicate it since. But the Norwegians, this is beautiful, the old Norse, they were not able to get their furnaces up high. So all these Viking swords were very low quality. They had a lot of slag and impurities in the metal, except the Uthbert blades. And this is what causes the Uthbert blades to stand out. This is relevant to science, just saying. The Uthbert blades is I can't remember how many, I think there were 130 swords total between the year 700 CE up to, did I say BCE or CE? It's supposed to be CE. So 700 CE up to 900 CE. These 150 blades show up. And they are such a high quality of metal, and they were all signed Uthbert. Now, that brings up the question, was it made by the same craftsmen? But they spanned like 200 years. So now we're going, well, was it one person who knew how to live 200 years? And I'm thinking, well, I think so. Possibly because he was a magi, he was an Ashavana, because he was using a type of metallurgy for blacksmithing that was literally 500 years ahead of its time, which is a huge clue to tell me that is somebody who had Magian. That is somebody who absolutely knew the magi sciences to the point where they were able to have advanced metallurgy this time period far in advance. It's extraordinary stuff. So that's blacksmithing. That's what you're doing when you are looking for the impurities. So now switch over into us, into the human the dialectical compression learning. It is literally the exact same process. You are Well, you go through a lake of fire and you're literally heating yourself up. Now, you're not literally heating yourself up. It is a side effect. You do heat up. Your energy, the amount of energy that flows through you increases your temperature. And a lot of people do report severe burning through this process when you are purging impurities. The impurities you are purging are lies and logical fallacy. Very painful process. And it actually used to be referred to as exorcism originally back when the Magi and the Ashavana did this process. So when you're going through the dialectical compression learning, you are compressing. It's pure alchemy. It's abstract alchemy. It's not literally chemical alchemy on the outside like people think it is. Alchemy is actually a mental process. And this is it. This is one of the starting processes of alchemy, is it gets you into how the subconscious mind works. This is very, very advanced. But the point is, when you start looking at this, what you're doing is you are using compression to purge and remove. By simplifying the process, you are purging and removing the impurities, which is lie and logical fallacy. So it comes out of you like schlag. It's really, really fascinating. And it's not the first similarity or parallelism between metallurgy and the mental process. It's extraordinary. When I started to do the dialectical compression learning, there were so many similarities. It's mechanical engineering. You're going to need to know about how a combustion engine works. You're going to need to know how a music box works. You have a governor inside of your mind. The governor is a mechanism inside of both a combustion engine and also a music box. You jam your governor in a music box and the music box does not play music. And that's what mental illness is your governor is jammed. You need to unjam your governor. And it's extraordinary to see the metalworks behind the subconscious mind and how it works in relativity to the machinations of it, clockwork and metallurgy. Every single profession, every one of them, ended up being a component of the subconscious mind. It was extraordinary. And it was to the point where there's a blueprint. Like, I mapped out the entire machine of it. And it starts with a cognitive core. And the cognitive core, later I found out, was just the process of the combustion engine. And it's funny because when I was studying physics, the last thing I was interested in was engineering. I just was not at all interested in building on Tesla's level. Like, I just did not interest me at all. So when my sciences ended, when the whole research came to the end, part of me was like, you know, I think I might actually get into mechanical engineering now. And it was like 2 days of me studying all of it. And as I was bringing it all in and just studying it, I it was hilarious because I'm like, oh my God, this is the same stuff that I just did. And I had no idea that I reinvented the engine. I had no idea. I had no idea. Like, I had mapped it out. I had my little, it was mind blowing. It was mind blowing. It was literally like, it was 1800s and I had mapped out this entire thing and I had no idea. And then when I studied mechanical engineering, I realized I was looking at a modern model of my own work. It was really different. So when you go through dialectical compression learning, you really feel, and this is where it got interesting because there's the physics of it, the sensations you're going to feel. All the sensations a person feels is physics. You feel physics. And when you understand that you're feeling physics, now here's the problem. You're going to feel the physics. That's what emotions are. You're feeling physics. You're going to feel chemical reaction happening. You're going to feel literally that physics feeling on you. But not knowing that it's physics you're feeling, this is where it gets interesting. There was this one day I was washing a pot. It was a giant Dutch oven. And I was scrubbing the pot and the water started to turn and it was just this perfect vision. Like, I had this great idea and I'd been trying to explain my work to a spiritualist and I went, I have an idea. So I videotaped it and I was spinning the water and I was spinning it counterclockwise and the water was spinning on its own, creating a water tornado. And I put my hand in and I salmoned it. I went the opposite way. I went against the current. And you saw the water just resist. You saw my hand pushing against the current, and then you saw the current switch and turn the other way, so it was going right side. I then spun the water to the right, to the right, to the right, and then I dove my hand in again, stopped it, turned it, resisted again. I did this like two or three times. I sent him the video, and he blew up ecstatic. Oh my God, that is exactly what it feels like. Yeah, it's physics. You are inside this spiral current right now. And the problem is we're so zoomed in when we begin our healing journey that we have no orientation. We don't understand where we are. And this I noticed was the biggest problem in all of mental health, period, because you don't orient. Now in philosophy, we know this. So the philosophers, we're way ahead of this. We know this. The very first thing you do before you even rip apart a person is you start with, let's sit down and orient yourself. Let's give you the mass so you can use the Cartesian coordinate system to find your way. We didn't call it that back then, but, and then it's going through the philosophical stages of existentialism and then into metaphysics and then into ontological physics so that you are literally going through the journey. But they misinterpreted all of that, threw it away, junked it. And then what they did after that was they invented their own thing 2,000 years later, botched it, and called it psychology. And that's what everyone today is using. So when I was explaining it to him, I'm like, before you can even begin the resistance, you have to understand where you are. You are very much inside of physics. But imagine, and it's really the magic school bus. We're all inside of the magic school bus. And when you start to go inside yourself, you're descending into the scalar. And the scalar and the vector, those are something that we're going to have to talk about. And this is really understanding what the scalar is and the vector is vital to all of this, understanding the vantage metric. So when you step into the scalar, you're now on a micro level and you're inside your own cell, magic school bus type, but you're blindfolded. So it's a combination of you're in the magic school bus, but you don't know you're inside of a cell witnessing the mitochondria working. You don't know that you're standing in your own DNA, literally feeling the back and forth of you moving from one of your nitrogen bases over to the other nitrogen base. And that's why you're spiraling, is because you're on your own DNA, which is a helix. And if you're going the wrong way on your DNA helix, you're going counterclockwise or you're going clockwise. And that depends upon which way you're facing. So most everybody has to turn around. They're going the wrong way. Now, if you are going the wrong way, you're going to get to the right, you're going to get a clockwise sensation. You're going the wrong way. You want to make sure you are going left. The other thing is it's going to be determined upon your orientation. It's called your anchor point. So you can have multiple anchor points. Really, there's only one true anchor point. There is only one true anchor point. All the other anchor points are lies. And everything else will cause you to go the wrong way. So I was talking to this one person, this one spiritualist. This is the same person with the spiraling water. And he was like, but I feel it going the right way. And he was like, I said, yeah, that's because you're backwards. Your chirality, your mirror of chirality has not been reversed yet. Now, the closer you get to Areti, that is the true anchor point, then the more you're going to have, you're going to go through the resistance. You're going to turn the circuit so that it goes the right way. It's going to go to the left. You want Fleming's left-hand law. That's going to generate your electromagnetic field. But if you are facing the wrong way, if you are facing kakia, that is mediocrity, then you're at the wrong anchor point and you're going to feel like you're going to the right. And that's going to spiral you out of control. You want to spiral into control by facing Areti quality. And that's going to cause integration physics to draw you in. Now, once you have your alignment set, what's going to happen is the closer you get to your aligned anchor point, it's either going to, depending upon which side you're aligned on, one side is aligned, which causes centrifugal force. The other causes centripetal force. Areti causes centripetal force, which causes the Coriolis force, which is what leads to your electromagnetic field. That's the one you want. So too many people have kakia, and they are aligned to kakia, which causes them to wander further into chirality, further away from the true center point. That causes them to wander off into what I call the wilderness of death, and that literally miscalibrates them to their degrees of freedom. That's when you get lost in the abstract. And this is where, when you understand the physics, when you understand what you're feeling, you can use the feelings and the physics sensations to navigate where you are. The problem is, and this truly is a problem, people trust their intuition. The intuition is only trustworthy if it contains 50% of truth or more. If your intuition contains less than 50%, of truth, then you're going to have high kakia levels, high mediocrity levels. And that is going to, basically what that ends up doing is you only feel good if you are acting in alignment to your intuition. You only feel bad when you are acting against alignment to your intuition. But if your intuition is aligned to mediocrity, good is going to feel bad for you. So your alignment is not your intuition. Your alignment is always going to be your priority and your value. Now, once you define kakia or areti as your value, then you have to decide what precisely is your value metrics. Now, that's where I step in and I'm like, these are your value metrics. If you want kakia, that's mediocrity, then break the 12 ethics. You'll do great. A lot of people are already doing that, so they're fine. But if you want standards, if you want quality and truth, then you need to follow the 12 ethics that will align you to areti. Now, your intuition is only aligned to what you've been conditioned to be aligned to. So you can't trust your intuition at first and or until your intuition has been trained to be aligned to the right anchor point. So the very first decision you have to make is, do you want kakia or do you want areti levels? Once you've chosen your alignment, the 12 ethics is going to be mathematically your only answer from that point on. So let's say you want to be areti aligned. You want quality in your life. You use the 12 ethics. Now, if you're coming from an abusive background where you've had a lot of narcissism, you are not going to feel good when you do good things. So it's going to feel bad. Now, that is something that is huge. You have to prepare for that. And this is where a lot of people don't prepare for it. They think, I'm just going to do good and it will feel good and then I'll know. That's not how that works. The intuition is a thermometer. It is not the thermostat. It is a thermometer. Big difference. So people use their thermometer like a thermostat. And that's the problem. If in order to know if it's comfortable for you, you need a metric telling you it's too hot or it's too cold. But people are not aware that they have sensories in their body that doesn't work, that can stop working, that can be broken, that can be misaligned. So your definition of good and bad is only defined as good and bad based upon the metrics you're using for an alignment to kakia or areti. But if you never choose your alignment, then you're never going to know which metric to use. That is your thermostat. So you have to first set your thermostat. That's going to be kakia or areti. If you are kakia aligned, you are in the wrong place. Go away. If you are areti aligned, you are my people. You are in the right place. We're going to show you how to do this. Areti alignment is people who value truth, people who value the ethics, people who are wanting an ethical life. Quality, ethics, and truth. Those are the only three qualifications of areti. The difference between areti and I'm going to point this out. Notice that love is not a factor. Love applies to both, which is why love is a really bad thing to use as a metric. You want to use truth, ethics, and you also want to use quality. Those are your three things to look at. And that's only on areti. Kakia has mediocrity, no quality. It has no 12 ethics. It throws the 12 ethics away. And it also has lies and logical fallacy. So those are the three characteristics of the anchor points. There are no other characteristics. Those are it. The 12 ethics, quality or mediocrity, truth and lie. Those are your only metrics. So once you choose your alignment, the next question is, and this is really where you have to be honest with yourself, is your intuition calibrated to the alignment of your choice? Now, if you have 50% or more lie inside of you, or logical fallacy, or miseducation, or narcissism, then you are not going to feel good when you are ethical. You're not. So you have to make sure that you are following. You basically have to recondition your intuition to switch alignments. So there's a lot of people out there who are aligned to Kakia and they want to be ethical, but they're depending upon it feeling good. So they feel good when they're unethical, so they stay with Kakia. Well, they claim to be aligned to Areti when they're not. So you see a lot of that right now. And when you try and talk to them, they want to talk about love. Love is not a variation, that's not at all a factor in this. It's irrelevant because Kakia loves, completely irrelevant. That's not going to tell you what your alignment is. Your alignment can only be chosen by quality, the 12 ethics, and also the... I just completely lost my train of thought. The truth. So once you have that figured out, you have to prepare for the discomfort that will follow when you start to train your intuition to follow Areti. It's going to feel uncomfortable. Now, there's going to be a breaking point. There's going to be that one point. It's the point of no return, where once you cross a certain point, it's going to switch and it's going to feel good. That is when it becomes automated. That right there is when everything becomes automated and you feel great. You don't have to think about trying. Now, what's amazing about this entire formula is when you apply it, you learn real fast how little everybody knows about everything. This really was the wake-up call. When I put all of this together and I started to use it and apply it for myself, it was the mathematical equation of what is good and what is bad. And when I started to put all this together, it really allowed me to really, it surprised me. For instance, swearing is not unethical. That was one of the things that blew my mind away. I was suddenly able to sit back and go, everything I thought that was unethical actually wasn't. Things that people think are unethical, irrelevant. Suddenly I was looking at it going, like love. And this is where it got really interesting. Now, spoiler alert, here it is. The 12 ethics are the 12 ingredients of love. But because people don't know what love is, they have no idea about using and following the 12 ethics. So once you do the 12 ethics and you master all 12 ethics, the first round, that is where you unlock this massive, this is amazing. You unlock the integration force inside of physics that causes, it's literally what causes force to happen, is integration. It's what is inside of cell mitosis. One of the side effects is you realize what love is. You realize you have found self-love. So you have to master all 12 ethics just to get the foundation love, which is self-love. That's the beginning. You do it again. You do it three more times. And then there's three types of self-love. That's the first three rounds of the 12 ethics. Now, after you integrate the first three rounds of the 12 ethics, you unlock one of the milestones. The milestone is you now have the ability to tell all truth from all lie. It's beautiful. Wow, is it really a beautiful existence after that. Once you get to that point, you do it again. You go through it a fourth time, a fifth time, a sixth time. And that's when you discover the next kind of love, which is love for others. And then you integrate self-love with love for others into a we love. Absolutely beautiful. So you realize that the 12 ethics are the 12 types of love. 12 ethics are the 12 ingredients of love. Now, if you don't know what love is, and people who are abused don't, they think they know what love is, and they set and they prioritize, but they're not using any math to keep themselves regulated or aligned properly to any kind of a metric. And that's the problem is your intuition cannot measure and do this metric unless you've actually grown up in a non-narcissistic culture. None of us can claim that. So as a result, there's a lot of people out there who have no idea what love is, and they think they're going to wing it when their entire system has been trained to attract the opposite of love. So it's really, really interesting when you look at how the whole thing fits together. And I actually wanted to talk about philosophy and how philosophy and science are like this beautiful thing, but I'll probably talk about that next, because philosophy, like really, it's a conversation that comes up a lot, and it really infuriates me because it's a testament to how little people know what philosophy really is. And as an ancient Greek, it pisses me the fuck off when I hear people talking about philosophy like a Roman, and they clearly have no idea what philosophy is. And then I'll see somebody talking about how they want to get into a certain science, or they want to do this as a profession, or they want to, and they throw out all these different ideas. I want to be a doctor. I want to do this. Should I also take philosophy? And the fact that they're even asking the question tells me you don't even know what philosophy is. If you have to ask that question, you don't know what philosophy is. Should I take philosophy? That's like asking, should I learn how to read? That is literally the equivalent. And that is how little people know about philosophy. The other side of that is when I look at the answers that people give back. Well, philosophy will help you do this. They'll help you do this. It'll help you. Every one of them is wrong. Every one of them is, they have no idea what philosophy is. And we're going to go back to Einstein, where he said, if you can't explain it simply, then you don't know it well enough. So here it is. Philosophy is a curriculum called the academic disciplines. There it is. Philosophy is a curriculum. It is not a science of subject. It is not a discipline. It is the curriculum. Philosophy is a curriculum. It is the curriculum. There's only one philosophy. It is the school. It's university. So asking if you should study philosophy is like asking if you should go to school. And it's all 21 academic disciplines taught in the right order and format, so you can learn all 21 academic disciplines in 10 years. That's philosophy. It's called an academic cradle, something that you're not going to get into until you get into academiology, which is something that comes at the very, very, very end of all 21 academic disciplines. So philosophy is not a discipline to study. It is all the disciplines. When you do philosophy right, the ancient Greek way, you will study all 21 academic disciplines, and you will understand how all 21 academic disciplines fit together like a big puzzle. And then you'll start to make academic discipline soup, which is what I do. Oh my God, it is so much fun. Academic discipline soup is my favorite hobby in the world. I make soup. I am a soup maker. And all I do is take all the academic disciplines and I make soup. I love making soup with knowledge. It's amazing. So when you take philosophy out of education, you're actually throwing all of education away, and you have completely destroyed the integrity of knowledge, education, and learning. You are now, it's the difference between, I show up with this magnificent puzzle, and it's a highly complex, gorgeous puzzle that I've put together, and people come up and they smash it with a hammer. And now there's pieces, 21 pieces all over. And I said, well, you could have just taken the whole thing and just learned it. That's philosophy. But instead they're like, no, I just want this piece. And they pick up one little piece. And I'm like, well, what about the other 20 pieces? And then when you integrate them, you're going to get synergy. Nope, I just want this one. Why? It's going to take you 30 years to learn that one because you neglected the other 20 plus the synergy. You know, if you do the 21 plus the synergy, it'll take you 10 years. No, I want this one. And they took that one and now they have 30 years because it triples the amount of time now. So they take that one. They might try and take two and then they'll leave. And I'm like, that is the dumbest thing, like, ever. And then so everyone's now carrying one or two of the pieces of this puzzle. And they're all going, do you think we should study philosophy? And I'm going, why did you break the ball? Well, why? What are you doing, Trojans? Like, and that's Trojan logic. That is Trojan logic. I'm going to show you the inside of the cave. That's what I need to call this place. The inside of the cave. That is exactly what this is. This is the insanity of the cave. Cave insanity. We can call it that. That can be like a show. I'll be like a sub show. Welcome to Cave Insanity. And that's the kind of crap that I look at. And I'm like, riddle me this, Batman. How do I not get pissed off and angry? How? Because that really is one of my trials, is how to not get so pissed off over the insanity of Trojan logic. It makes no sense. So like that is, I have a few metrics where you can really sit down and you can measure what education should be, what education for the ancient Greeks is, versus what you guys are doing or what the Trojans are doing. And when you start to compare, you really look at it and go, what the heck is this crap? It's really Wonderland content. It really is. It's the Wonderland of the Trojan mindset. It's really backwards. So no, you should not study philosophy. You need to go to philosophy. And there it is. If you were asking the right question, you would understand. And that's if you understood it, you would ask the right question. And you would know the question is, should I go to philosophy? Yes, you should go to philosophy. It's called school. And the thing is, no one has gone to philosophy in 2,000 years. So now, because they haven't gone to philosophy, they all think that philosophy is a subject and a discipline to study, but it's not. So riddle me this, Batman, because this is where it gets interesting. If all you study in philosophy is philosophers and the school of philosophy, philosophical thought, what did Plato study? Because Plato didn't have all those philosophers to study. Plato didn't have a history of philosophy to study. Plato did not have an entire philosophical thought that he had to study. But he had an entire school. So what did he study? And that's what I learned. That right there is what I learned from Plato's curriculum. Which is why when I tell people, if you're going to study philosophy, only study Plato. Do not study Aristotle. Do not study anyone after Plato. Plato is all you need. Because Plato will teach you philosophy. Everyone else teaches you their opinion. Not Plato. Plato teaches you how to do it. Everyone else just is a glorified ego trip of the self, but not Plato. Plato is the only one who actually teaches philosophy.